Do you have any experience in motion pictures?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit, actually. I have quite a bit of experience. I'm an active renter at Blockbuster, and I attend the film, the cinema, as much as possible, weekly, biweekly, intermediately.
Would you be willing to cut your hair?
Oh. Yes, but it's usually better if someone else does it.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we double back on the movies that impacted us growing up as 90s kids and decide whether they hold up today or are best left in the past. I'm Tristan.
And I'm Greg.
And we have a very, very special guest today.
Uh-huh.
A little local podlord, Alexi Toliopoulos. If you're not familiar with Alexi, we have a few international listeners. How many podcasts do you have, would you say, Alexi?
I've lost count. I don't know how many podcasts I've got anymore, but I have a bevy of them, I promise you that.
A bevy.
So
have you been described as a podlord before?
I've not heard podlord before, but I might put it as my actual moniker. That might be my real thing.
You are
thing.
A podlord.
I'm a lord of the pods.
You know why you're a podlord?
Mm-hmm.
When we first started our podcast, we thought we came up with a very unique premise. I would say there is nuance, but ultimately, once we started doing
ours
our podcast,
is called Double Impact.
I stumbled across one called Total Reboot,
mm-hmm.
hosted by yourself and Cameron James. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty. We didn't invent this. And then I listened to a couple episodes and I was like, damn, these guys are good. And I couldn't listen anymore because I didn't want to like.
You can't,
start
right?
I didn't want to taint. Like, I needed to have our own thing. Otherwise, I'd unconsciously copy you guys or something.
I know. I had to start cutting out like other movie podcasts. I'm like, oh, I don't want to steal ideas. I don't want to say the same things.
Uh-huh. Exactly. And then when I heard about Finding Drago and I realized, oh, those are the same guys. I listened to that and that was like mind blowing. So friends of the show out there, if you haven't listened to Finding Drago or Finding Desperado, get on it. It's wild stuff.
Thanks so much, dude. Yeah. They're like still
so
my favorite things to do. So like Finding Desperado is the feed now. Check it out. It's like a mystery investigation comedy podcast where we like actually try to solve like popular culture mysteries that we come across.
That's what I love about it because I like the format of true crime, but I find it a little bit too dark.
Mm.
I feel like true crime podcasts kind of trivialize people dying and shit.
True pop.
Whereas this culture. is true pop culture.
True pop.
Yeah, pop culture detectives. I have a vivid memory. It was pre-COVID days and I was walking to work listening to like I think the final episode of Finding Drago, but I got to work too early. So I sat in the food court at Barangaroo listening to the rest of the episode before going to work. It's on the edge of your seat stuff. You got to listen, guys. But let's not forget also you did a podcast called Mic Check.
Yeah.
Which I haven't listened to yet, but I want to get on that. That was the Mike Myers focused podcast.
It's very silly, I would say. It's Cameron and I, as best friends, we kind of found that we have a shared love and like complete admiration for Mike Myers, like being one of our biggest heroes.
And we just
decided to only do podcasts only about Mike Myers movies.
And I was looking that up today and it went for a lot longer than I would have imagined for such a specific premise.
He's a pretty wonderful
human. We stretched
it
out and we're like, if he ever makes another movie, we'll jump back in, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We also never did one on Bohemian Rhapsody because we're just like, we don't want to watch the movie. So we decided not to do one.
Oh, is he in that? Is he?
Little cameo.
Anti
Bohemian
like a
Rhapsody.
Manager or something? A manager? Yeah. I don't know.
Ah.
Who ironically thinks the song Bohemian Rhapsody is too long.
Oh, yeah?
Oh,
no one's going to listen to that. Yeah.
Clever.
Little did
Zany
he know
stuff.
That he would become the icon behind Bohemian Rhapsody in many years.
He got it back of the charts, baby.
Sure.
Exactly.
Did.
And what is it? The Big Film Buffet.
Mm-hmm.
That's the new Netflix podcast that you're hosting as well. See, I don't know how you do it all. We do one podcast a week and I forget to like shower sometimes. Like, I don't know how you have multiple podcasts.
It's more of a choice.
Yeah, it's more of a choice.
It's a lifestyle choice.
I think you're right. Yeah, it's a choice and I've chosen to give up showering in favor of podcasting. So it's all worked out well enough.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Alexi has picked Bowfinger for this episode.
Yeah.
We'll get into that shortly. But before we do, aside from going through your podliography, is that a thing?
It is now. You're just,
oh, man.
You're wordsmithing up a storm.
I'm making up words.
Yeah. Dude, they're all working.
You two are like creating a whole new dictionary that I have to adopt.
Yeah, I'm along for the ride, but I'll take it.
A podgenary, for me. Greg is going to shoot you some rapid-fire questions. They're going to just help our friends of the show get a bit of a sense of who is this guy? What makes him tick?
These, I can best describe them as light-touch, generic interest questions.
Yes.
All right, let's do it. DVD or VHS?
I'm a DVD boy. I worked in a video store in the DVD era. I collect DVDs.
Oh, you did?
DVD is my most prized possession and my greatest love.
That is the exact one I wanted you to expand on, because I remember seeing something like that on your Instagram, and I've never heard of someone being like a DVD guy. Nothing wrong with DVDs, but it's just it's an era that doesn't get a lot of. Is it like the special features and that kind of thing? Is that what it is?
Special features. It's that the case is smaller than a VHS. It's the quality. I'm all DVD and obviously more Blu-ray, but DVD is funnier to say.
Yeah.
It is.
I miss special features. I would pay more, if you're listening Netflix, I would pay more for a Netflix subscription if I could have director's commentaries and hilarious outtakes and that kind of thing.
It'd help us with it. It'd enrich in our pod.
Help us with the podcast.
Yeah. If you're listening, Netflix, please give me a raise as well. So that's just if they are listening.
Big time.
Greg, you got any messages for Netflix?
Stop taking our
movies off. Every time we've got a movie on the list. That's true. And they're like, all right, let's do that one this week, and it's no longer on Netflix.
Oh, that is like such a specific conundrum that we face all the time. I can't believe I finally met someone else that has the same life problem as us. I remember we did like Blowout, and then like we had it locked in for months, and then it just disappeared from any streaming service. Like, what are we going to do?
Yes.
Where's the warning? Maybe a warning.
Sometimes
maybe
they disappear from even purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we wanted to do Crocodile Dundee initially, you couldn't even get it anywhere.
No, they couldn't.
Yeah. And Bill and Ted for a while, wasn't there?
Shit.
I think a little like 2 months remaining, you know, a little amber or red bar at the top of the title. But then I will watch this.
Yeah.
Netflix, if you're listen to Greg. That's exactly what we want. We demand an amber alert when a movie's leaving.
We've got a good list of demands for you guys.
Welcome to Double Impact, the podcast where we list out ideas for Netflix.
We're just like old men yelling at a cloud. Things we don't like.
All right. Rapid fire is humming. We're up to the second question.
Very rapid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now we're going to be rapid.
Austin Powers or Wayne's World?
Fuck, this is so hard.
I
will go Austin Powers because I think the character is the funniest movie character ever.
Oh, nice.
I tend to agree.
Drago or Apollo?
Oh, snap. Ay, 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 ay. I'm going for Drago.
Oh, big.
Yeah.
But I guess that's fair.
Dunk.
I think you're like one of two people that's allowed to say that. Indiana Jones or Han Solo?
Indiana Jones.
I don't think there's been a Han Solo yet.
We like to say correct
we
to
agree.
That one. That's,
we respect Star Wars, but we've never gotten into it.
We're not Trekkies.
It's a different thing.
We're in space. Okay. Bruce Lee or Jackie Chan?
Oh, wow. That's tough. I got to go Jackie.
Fair.
Got to go Jackie. You got bigger filmography. Bigger filmography. Yeah, that's what it came down to.
It's also been alive longer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Which helps.
Yeah.
Pamela Anderson or Sally Field?
Whoa. This is a huge question. And I got to go Pammy, baby. I got to go Pammy.
One day.
Greg is on a mission to prove that Sally Field is a babe.
Sally Field is a babe, lady. But if you're putting up against Pammy, my God, you know, one's going
to
top
her. I think that's a good point. I'm going to have to rephrase that question to take out. I'll have to make it like the mum out of Step by Step or Sally Field. That's probably a little bit more.
Suzanne Summers.
Yeah. That's probably more level.
Yeah, it's probably closer. Yeah.
Okay. Van Damme or Steven Seagal?
Van Damme, dude. It's Van Damme.
Correct.
Yeah, that is.
When I said
that's
no right or wrong, that's kind of a lie.
That's a test. It could have been a short pod there.
Okay, Biggie or Tupac?
Shit. My instinct was Biggie, so I'll go Biggie.
Ah, that's correct as well. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation or Die Hard?
I actually will go Die Hard.
Respect.
Favorite current TV show?
Oh, my Lord, that's tough. What am I watching at the moment? I guess I watch Top Chef is my favorite show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in lockdown, I watched all 17 previous seasons of Top Chef in about like 1 month.
Top Chef, like the American series.
The American reality cooking TV show. That's my favorite. Because I more watch movies than TV shows. So, like, I watch a movie every single day, and it's usually a reality show that I get hooked on is the only things that keep me watching a TV show.
Yeah, interesting.
Right, yeah.
Favorite all-time TV show?
Oh, I gotta go with my gut instinct, which is The Sopranos.
Yeah.
You're a man of taste, Alexi.
Yeah.
Thank you, Greggy. Thank you, Tristan.
I don't know if there's passing or failing, but I feel like you've passed.
I feel like we could input this into some kind of computer and evaluate your character.
Yeah.
And I would say it's a ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, it's a ding, ding, ding.
Fine taste.
I also enjoyed your honest and enthusiastic answers. You had some people – actually, no, everyone's been pretty good.
Everyone's been pretty good.
Yeah, I was like – No, they're good.
I had to look deep within. Greg, it was the only way to answer the questions. I had to look deep within.
I hope you learned a little bit about yourself too.
Yeah, that's true.
I did. I mean, the one that I truly learned was Biggie over Tupac. I'm actually shocked that's how it went. But
and it's on the record now.
Yeah, in the moment, that was the realest answer.
It'll be on your Wikipedia page at some point.
We'll tell them.
That was a nice getting to know you session. I think it's probably time we talk about the movie. But before, to kind of set the context for the movie, we should also look at what was that year like in film? And it was quite a big year. Often.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. With movies of this era, the later 90s, Greg and I often observe that they're sort of in this awkward in-between phase where they can often be outdated without us. You can't kind of tell if they're going to be classics or not yet. Mm. Whereas a lot of the mid-80s ones, there's an established kind of vintage there. You go, oh, yeah, it's a charming 80s movie, whereas late 90s is kind of awkward teens or something.
Yeah.
And the top 10 is right in there with that. You got Star Wars Episode 1, for instance.
Huge movie.
Oh, and you got Austin Powers. Austin Powers came out that year.
Exactly.
Oh, really? I don't know how you had time to watch Bowfinger. Yeah, the first one.
Oh, the second one.
Isn't it?
Spy Shag Me's 2. First one is International Man of Mystery. Second one, Spy Shag Me.
Oh, yeah.
Third one is Gold Member. Fourth one is Austin Pussy, which I pray does come out one day.
Wait, a fourth one?
I'm praying they make it.
And have you made up that title? Is that just...
Well, Austin Pussy's in Gold Member. Steven Spielberg is the director of Austin Pussy, which is a movie being made within Gold Member where Tom Cruise plays Austin Powers. Which is, very Bowfinger-esque, if you will.
It is. Mm. It's
it all comes back to Bowfinger.
Exactly. Bowfinger knows all. I would say that 1999 is like kind of now known as like this big classic movie year, right? Like people go, like 99, it had The Matrix, it had American Pie, it had like, Magnolia, all these movies have become like big classics. So it kind of feels like it's like this shift where like all these big directors that established themselves in like the late 80s and the 90s all kind of got to like a big movie at that point in time that kind of shifted the perspective of like where film was heading. So it's like established filmmakers making their big movie and then new filmmakers making their first movie that somehow becomes a big movie. And it's kind of like become like this big center point for like the 21st century, how film would develop in some kind of way.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Well, and even The Sixth Sense was that year.
And, of course, Notting Hill.
Notting Hill.
Huge. They're all huge movies, like of all different genres. Like Sixth Sense is like a horror classic now, mystery classic. Notting Hill is one of like the biggest rom-coms of all time. I would say
Tristan
that
doesn't like it.
American Pie is like probably my big one from this year. And it's that like started this whole like new comedy movement of like gross out comedy coming back in like the early 2000s. Yeah.
It's interesting too because we did Wild Things recently, which was 98.
Yeah.
And you compare, I know I just made that comment before about, awkward teens years and whatnot, but 98 and 99, when you look at the top 10 movies for the year, they're almost like they're 10 years apart a little bit. Like they're more awkward. The 98 ones are like, you're right. Yeah. The 99
it's a much finer vintage.
It's a much finer vintage. Green Mile. Wild Wild West. Man, if if Wild Wild West didn't come out, we might have had Will Smith in The Matrix too.
I know, so, right?
Wow.
I can't even imagine that movie, to be honest, with Will Smith.
I don't really want to.
Yeah, he would have done that thing. He's got that move.
Yeah.
The teary with the mouth. Yeah. 10 Things I Hate About You. Office Space.
Oh, Office Space. My God. That's a great comedy. Yeah, it's kind of a wild year. Like, there's so many different things.
Yeah, it's great. But there was one movie, came in all the way...
At number 37.
All the way down to number 37. Bowfinger. So it came out in August of 1999, budget of $55 million with a return of $98.6 million.
Oh, sorry, a budget of $2,184.
Yeah, that's right. Every movie, net, gross, net, net, whatever. I like that one. That was good. Rotten Tomatoes score, critic score of 81%, audience score of 61%.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Respectable.
Interesting.
Respectable.
Respectable. Yeah, bit of a gap
discrepancy,
between.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I imagine, Alexi, I've got to ask you, you chose this movie, so I got to imagine this was a big one for you.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite comedies. Nice. And it's also one that I picked because I'm like, I've never gotten a chance to talk about Bowfinger. So I'm like, I got to bring it to you guys. And
it hasn't been rebooted yet. Yeah,
exactly. It hasn't been rebooted yet. It's not like, it's kind of like a more cult classic. And when you guys were like talking about like, the kind of movies that you talk about on this podcast are like those kind of like ish childhood movies or more of those movies you have like a big nostalgia for. And I remember just like this was one that used to play on like Channel 10 or something like constantly. I think I've only in the last couple of years have seen this movie without ads in it. And it's become like one of those formative movies for me because it's got so many of like the comedians and actors that I love. And Frank Oz himself has become like one of the comedic directors that I really revere and admire so much. And it just kind of has it all. Like, it's really funny. It's a cinephile's dream, this movie. And it's just like fucking crazy. It's like a weird, weird, weird comedy.
Yeah. It is. It's pretty wacky. And I think you're a little bit younger than us. So was this an entry point for you with any of these guys, or this was more like the Avengers of comedy coming together?
Wow.
What was the vibe for you?
That's a great question because it really is like the Avengers of comedy. And it's hard to say because I feel like Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy have like always been present for me. Like they just are, you know, absolutely probably top two biggest comedians, like up there with Mike Myers for like my comedic tastes and sensibilities have always been shaped by these two guys. And so it's hard to say, but I think it was a big one for me to realize like that they can exist in the same universe was kind of mind blowing. Because Steve Martin, I guess as a kid, I would have known him more from like other movies from this era, like Father of the Bride and stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then Eddie Murphy was just always like, I had the Eddie Murphy Best of SNL on VHS.
Oh, yes.
And I was just like, that blew my freaking mind open, like how talented he was. Like he was like, I think as a kid, I was like so impressed by like, this guy is like so beautiful, the most handsome man in the world,
the funniest
man in the world. And somehow he could have actually made it as a professional singer as well.
Like
the way he sings the sketches.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Every time we do an Eddie Murphy movie, we just start gushing. Like he's just amazing.
It doesn't make sense.
He's just a great entertainer. It's just he can do anything.
He's like Frank Sinatra or something. He can be anything.
Yeah. He's been saying he wants to do a stand-up tour where it's stand-up and music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he said that a few years ago. Nothing's happened yet. But
my girl wants to party all the time. Party all the time. Party all the time.
Love it. Love that song. It was my ringtone for years.
He's a special, special man. And then for me, that was the driving factor when it I saw this in the cinema when it came out.
Mm.
And it was me and a big group of mates who were Eddie Murphy obsessed teenagers.
Yeah.
And we saw it primarily as an Eddie Murphy movie.
Wow.
That's not to say I wasn't a Steve Martin fan, but it was definitely, that was the main driver. I went through a weird thing with Steve Martin where when I was a really little kid, I thought he was Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah.
So
little as in like till recently?
Yeah. No, when I was like first saw Naked Gun and it was the best movie I'd ever seen, and I would just go to Video Easy and choose
take
movies.
Roxanne.
I took home The Man with Two Brains
because
it had a picture of, it just had his face on it. And I was like, yeah, the guy with gray hair. I love that guy. And it was a while before I realized this isn't really the same kind of thing. I still like it, but it's not really the same kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then L.A. Story, which I haven't seen in a long time, is a really weird one for me. It's almost forgotten, right? Like you kind of forget it even exists. L.A. Story was I was a little kid, like 7 years old or something, and my dad was living in Singapore and I would fly to Singapore like twice a year to visit my dad. And in those days, there was one screen on the plane and they would play one movie and you just had to watch it. And it was L.A. Story. And so I saw it like four times as a little kid. And in some ways, parts of it are really vivid, mainly Sarah Jessica Parker and roller skates and things. But then otherwise, I couldn't tell you what it's about, but I'm really keen to revisit that. But yeah, and I don't think I've, so I went to the cinema to watch this with mates. We had a good time, but I don't think I really rewatched it much since until this week. Yeah. What about you, Greg?
I kind of missed it in 99, funnily enough. Right. Like I'm a huge, huge Eddie Murphy fan. 99 was my final year of high school, so I think I was probably preoccupied with pretending to study and probably drinking. So I probably missed, I missed Bowfinger probably. And I think Eddie Murphy at the time, he was off the boil a little bit. Like he'd done Holy Man and Dr. Dolittle, I think, leading up to this. So I was probably angry at him for producing that when I know who he is.
Yes.
But it did creep back in the uni years. Someone must have had it on DVD and we watched it. And then just like the permeation into our vernacular from this film was up there with any other film at the time, you know, like Butter Baby. Everything was Butter Baby. We talked a lot about Alien Love.
If you get in a uni household in that first wave of DVD culture, that's being watched on
repeat. It got in the mix and as I say, it was on from there. So it came a bit late for me, but formed a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
I think that's accurate for what this movie is. It's like it became like a bit of a cult movie. Like it took time for people to realize like what Bowfinger was because it is quite weird. And like it is the thing that you love most. Like it's Eddie Murphy doing multiple characters, but they're not like they're exaggerated, but in a more realistic, less broad, more subtle
than Nutty Professor.
Yeah. The brother is quite subtle.
There's no prosthetics other than the braces.
It's so funny.
Well, with that, how about I get into the origin story of this movie?
Yeah, this is the part where Tristan gets into the origin story.
Yeah, we call it origin story.
I love an origin story, and I can't wait to hear how it all unfolds.
Origin story.
That's our friend Octavio. He has a deep voice.
Gorgeous Octavio. Oh my God.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one because I thought I was coming up with nothing. Sometimes you do a movie and there's so much rich history around it and other times there's nothing. And at first this was one of the nothing ones and I thought this whole segment was just going to be Steve Martin decided to make Bowfinger. But I came across an interview between Carrie Fisher and Steve Martin.
Whoa.
From when this movie was just coming out. It got republished when she passed away. And there's all kinds of nuggets in there.
I can't wait to chomp on those nuggets.
let me tell you.
Are they McNuggets?
They're delicious McNuggets.
Ooh.
Maybe a sweet and sour sauce, barbecue sauce.
Oh, my gosh. The top two sauces. Yeah. We're not effing around with that ketchup stuff.
The honey mustard, get out of here.
No thanks, honey mustard.
So the first little nugget, this is more of an appetizer. I wouldn't say this is the nugget. he had this idea 15 years before he made it. Which is interesting because this puts it back in his career 15 years earlier.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it puts him in his early days of his movie career. So he's almost perhaps a bit of a Bowfinger himself trying to get shit made. I think he would have already made The Jerk 15 years earlier, but you know, it's still early days. And he said he'd over the, he likens it to a fish called Wanda. He'd seen a fish called Wanda, which wasn't 15 years earlier, but, you know, as it's germinating in his head.
Yeah.
And it's something about the vibe of that movie. It's just like very easy to watch and just a really great vibe. And he's like, I want to make a movie like that. And so he had this idea in the back of his head and he just couldn't end it. He had no ending. And so he ended up writing another story and then merged the two. And so the other story, and this is the biggest nugget. The other story he had was about a big time Hollywood producer, perhaps Robert Downey Jr. He didn't say, but I got to imagine Robert Downey Jr. probably. A Hollywood producer who finds out he had 2 months to live. Now, the way he talks about it, this other story, this producer says to himself, I've had a great life, a great career. When I'm gone, the other producers will go on and they're my friends and they'll make movies and everything will be great. But then he thinks, hang on a second, why should I be the only one to die? So he decides to throw a party and invite everyone in Hollywood and to basically blow up his house and murder every big dog in Hollywood.
Whoa.
Now, this becomes super interesting when you mush it together because...
This is a comedy, yeah?
It's a comedy. Well, this is the thing. This is why it kind of got taken out because he's like, it's getting a bit too dark. But the Bowfinger part of the story is still there, and basically the final shot they need is a party in the Hollywood Hills kind of theme, and so they go to shoot it at that party. And they're shooting at the party. They go outside for a nice exterior shot. The house blows up and every big dog in Hollywood is dead. And so it's a bit of a Stephen Bradbury moment where now the movie they've made wins all the Oscars because there's no one else around.
Take out the competition.
Yeah. So that was the big ending was the final shot, I think, was at the Oscars and there's like 17 people in the audience. And
I had no idea. The Oscars.
I had no idea either. So I was very happy when I found this nugget, a delicious nugget, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's all verbatim. This isn't the old IMDb trivia bullshit.
Right.
Which forms the backbone of the rest of our show.
Yeah. But so that was pretty wild stuff. But he said, like you observed, Greg, it's a little bit dark. And he didn't want it to be so much of a black comedy. He wanted it to be more the big, fun, physical comedy.
Is he a black comedy? I mean, it's interesting to hear that because if I think Steve Martin – I think is a good example of his level of humor, or Father of the Bride, which I know he didn't write, but he's a happy guy. It's happy comedy.
It goes down easy. Yeah,
yeah. It's not dark.
Yeah,
not even a shade of gray.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like this. Like it's almost like the way that he delivers or like creates comedy. It's quite like light or jovial, even though
gentle,
there could be like dark subject matter, or his jokes are very cutting or very dark jokes, but because of like the persona and his delivery of it all, it's all very elevated to a very like joyful, jovial kind of setting.
Or even the darkest he probably gets is Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is dark but still hilarious.
He's so good. He's so good.
That's one of my another Frank favorite Oz movies. Joint. Yeah, Frank Oz.
We covered it recently, and that was a big one for me in my childhood. Another one I picked from the video store just based off the cover, thinking it was a really scary movie. And I hadn't watched it since I was a kid, and we did it on the pod, and I think it's now in my top five movies. Absolutely. I love it.
It's
I listen to the soundtrack.
So well made. The soundtrack is so good. Frank, to me, that's like Frank Oz being like showing off that he can be like a master director.
And like he's doing all these tricks. Yeah.
So good. It's like a 1940s musical. It looks sensational.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great. Anyway, back to this movie. needless to say, that's not the ending we got. Felt a little bit dark. The other nugget I got out of it was that it wasn't written for Eddie Murphy. It was written for a more traditional action star.
Oh, really?
And it was, it was the producer, Brian Grazer, who suggested Murphy. He produced Nutty Professor. He's like, hey, you got a guy that's going to play two guys? I know a guy.
Makes so much sense.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense.
Who else is there? Maybe Mike Myers.
But then off the back of that, they rewrote the role quite a bit. Especially I think that his first scene, that whole, you know, I found it's perfectly divisible by three, or the KKKs, all that kind of stuff. That was all written specifically for Murphy. Yeah. And actually Murphy says a lot of pretty much everything he said was on the page. There wasn't too much improv. Like he's
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Anyway, we'll get into that. So usually at this part there's some juicy what we call precasties, like this guy almost played that guy. And in this there isn't really. The only one I saw, which is more at IMDb trivia level of legitimacy was Keanu Reeves potentially being in the mix for the Eddie Murphy part as the action man.
Oh, really? As the action man.
Yeah. As the Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of hot off Speed, right? Like Keanu's like
Speed
and Johnny Mnemonic and I guess Point Break as well. So I guess he kind of is like the hip action star at the moment, which is so weird to think about.
It's he's had a wild ride, hasn't he?
Well, this is the Matrix year.
Yeah.
He kind of was busy making the blockbuster instead of playing the guy who makes a blockbuster.
So if Will Smith didn't make Wild Wild West and did The Matrix instead, maybe, just maybe, Keanu would have been in Bowfinger.
Yeah. Because Keanu's not going to say yes to Wild Wild West, so it's not a direct swap over.
Exactly. It's just the whole chain. It's a chain reaction, man. Butterfly effect.
Bowfinger effect.
Bowfinger effect. Now, last but not least, obviously this is directed by Frank Oz. I don't have a lot to say about him in this context in terms of origin story. Not that he was just a director for hire. I feel like, you know, he's obviously, he directed it. But I don't have any juicy nuggets about him in relation to the making of the movie.
Ah.
But I'm sure we'll talk about him as we dive into the movie itself. But, you know, bish, bash, bosh, they get these people in Hollywood there and they make a picture and you got yourself Bowfinger.
Rap party at the Viper Room.
Rap party at the Viper Room.
Yeah, baby.
Let's play the trailer.
Do you have any experience in motion pictures?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit, actually. I have quite a bit of experience. I'm an active renter, and I attend the film, the cinema, as much as possible, weekly, bi-weekly, inter-week.
Would you be willing to cut your hair?
Oh, yes, but it's usually better if someone else does it. I've had a few accidents.
Would you be willing to show your naked rear end in a movie?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Welcome aboard. Here's your wardrobe.
Sex with Jeff.
So?
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Stay with him, stay with him. Let go, picture! Keep it together, keep it together, keep it together. Keep it together, I'm keeping it together.
Awesome. Great trailer.
Good trailer. Now, Alexi, Greg likes to do a bit of a plot recap just to make sure our listeners are all on the same page. So as we dive into the movie, they know what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah.
Greg, you want to take us on a journey?
Thank you. I am going to take you on a journey. And I'm going to start this synopsis with a question. Alexi, Tristan, have you ever had a dream?
Yeah.
Wow. Almost every night.
Yeah. Sometimes during the day too.
A dream so real. And so clear that you'll save for a lifetime until you have $2,184 to make that dream a reality. Well, Bobby Bowfinger did. Bobby struggled his entire life as a B-film producer with a dream to one day make a Hollywood film. And you know what? This is his story. The story of a man who will finally shoot his shot when he comes across the script of a lifetime, Chubby Rain. And he's so committed to his dream that he's willing to manipulate a team of vulnerable misfits over and over again to psychologically damage and blackmail a fragile Hollywood star, to exploit cheap illegal labor, to lie repeatedly. Because in the end, that's show business, baby.
That's show business, baby.
It's also a love story between us and the magic of cinema.
Absolutely. Beautifully really put, is. Greg.
Greg, you touched on one of the things there that stood out to me in the rewatch was that I didn't find Bowfinger all that likable as a human.
Yeah.
Well, it's more of an asshole than I remembered.
Yeah, he's a bad man, really.
Yeah. I mean, Steve Martin makes him sort of likable, but yeah. I really struggled with that a little bit.
Well, that's kind of what I was interested when you were touching on that, Alexa, when you were saying he can make the, you know, the dark subject matter lighter. Like, I mean, in this instance, he's making quite a dark guy lightable.
Yeah. Lightable. I think that's like the Steve Martin secret, right? Like, he often plays like big assholes, but you kind of like root for them. And I think for this one, like the secret is it's like this character is led by and like lives on his determination. And it's kind of like that chutzpah that you just have to respect a little bit. Like Bowfinger like fucks up a lot, but he wants his dream so bad that he manipulates every single person in his life to achieve his one goal. And there's like something about that Steve Martin can make like really likable, and also just like you're kind of on his side because you've got no other choice really.
Uh-huh. And they do such a good job of setting that up. So the opening scene where he's just on the phone, there's not real any direct exposition. It's just you just overhearing his phone call and whatever he's doing. I can't remember what he's doing now, but he's doing all these things that basically tell you everything you need to know about this person. And basically everything you're saying, it just sets this guy up as sympathetic, kind of an idiot, but you're on his side. You're on his side.
I think it's because he's also like such a freaking loser. Like you're just like, you from, you know, from other Hollywood movies and movies about Hollywood, I think this is a really good satire on all that stuff. But specifically, like, you know what like a big producer looks like. You know how they talk. You know what they drive. You know how they dress. And like Bowfinger is just not that. So you just know that he's a bit of a schmuck, a bit of a loser, and definitely an underdog, because he has like that pure dream where he's like, one day that FedEx truck's going to come and it's going to deliver a script to me. And there's something pure about like how base and simple that dream is. It's not like, I'm going to become a billionaire. I'm not going to have the biggest movie in Hollywood. It's the simple dream of like, one day I'm going to be part of this thing that's left me 100% out this whole time.
I agree. And actually, I forgot to mention, that was one of the things I remembered from first watching it. That stuck with me, that small thing of the FedEx delivery, which does date the movie a little bit, because I guess this was pre kind of online shopping.
Yeah.
You know, everyone gets a FedEx box every day now.
Exactly.
But
now it's DHL or Toll that's going to be delivering it.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they just leave the slip and you got to go to the post office. And it's a headache. But I know that exact feeling. I remember when I first started working. So Greg and I used to work together at an advertising agency. And my first email addressed to me, I was like,
Whoa.
I made it, Mom.
Yeah. It felt so important. I was like, I got it. Whoa.
An
electronic mail.
I got it. Yeah. Tristan Burrell.
Like on my first
assistant.
Day on the job. Like, I think I was wearing a tie. It was like my first day.
You did wear a tie. Yeah. Your first day.
And then I realized, oh, no one wears ties.
No one wears ties.
But yeah, there's something so pure about that. And I think that book ended by that. These guys watching the premiere and their faces when they see themselves on the screen, it just makes the whole thing land perfectly.
Absolutely.
Happy. I wouldn't say I got goosebumps, but I got a little,
You get a little something. Oh. It's a pang in the heart for the Bowfinger crew.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to rewatch it this week?
Absolutely. I watched it again today. I watched it not too long ago. Bowfinger, I bought it on Blu-ray because I'm like, I got to get this in my repertoire. This is going to be a regular occurrence to me to watch Bowfinger.
Was there anything that stood out to you? I mean, you've rewatched it a lot, obviously, but this time around or in recent viewings that has stood out to you more than in previous viewings?
Yes, there's like a whole subplot that I have only like awoken in the last couple of viewings. That's now my favorite thing in the whole movie.
This might be the same thing.
It might
be. The Mexicans?
It is. It's the crew. Like where they
Yes.
It's my favorite thing in the whole movie. I think it's so funny.
That's the last note I added because I rewatched this afternoon. I watched it earlier in the week and I only picked up on it this time and I was like, I've missed this whole happening. Did you pick up on it?
I was, I didn't before.
I didn't notice it at all. The whole, because the college years, you would have picked up on that shit. I didn't notice it at all.
It's so funny, right?
You want to break it down for the listeners? Yeah.
Let's break it down because I think it's so weird and so funny and I never noticed it for years because, like, you know, they need to get a crew and they can't afford like a real legitimate crew to become like the cinematographers, the cameras, the grips, the gaffers, everyone that fills out like a Hollywood crew. So they like pick up like new Americans, like Mexican migrants that are usually used for like day laboring, like doing handiwork on like construction and then train them up to become like the Hollywood crew. And for my whole life, I was just like, I got that was the joke. Like, I got that. But I'd never, like, really understood, like, how it develops, that they all become, like, major cinephiles. Like, they all watching, like, Stanley Kubrick, like, watching all the greats. Like, you can hear them talking about, like, Dr. Strangelove in, like, the background and stuff. And then there's like one point where one of them is reading Cahiers du Cinéma, like the French film magazine. That's not in English or Spanish. It's in French. I just think that's so funny. And then by the end of the movie, they're all like big time Hollywood crew. They're all like
the only ones that
are booked on working on like sets after that. They've all got their next jobs lined up. And like, you know, now in the last few years, like working in like film and TV myself, that is like now my favorite joke, because like that's so funny that these are like the proper pro level like dream crew now.
So good. Yeah. And I only picked up on it in this last viewing towards the end. I noticed that scene you're talking about where they're talking about Dr. Strangelove and Apocalypse Now and Stanley Kubrick and Citizen Kane.
So
and I was like,
funny.
Wait. And then I rewound it and I was like, I've probably missed a whole lot of these little nuggets throughout.
The way. Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Truly, the one when I noticed that they had like the Cahier magazine, I was like, holy shit, who is this made for?
I missed
like
the
this
magazine,
joke is for like me say. Once.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they are the only ones that are good at their job. Because more broadly, I think that's also why the movie works so well. Is like, I think Frank Oz even said it in an interview I was watching, is like, the only thing these guys have working against them is that they're not very good. Like none of these people are good at their jobs except for the Mexicans to become phenomenal. They're all terrible actors, terrible producers, et cetera, et cetera. But it's got that earnestness behind it.
Yeah.
A little bit like, you know, a Tommy Wiseau vibe.
Absolutely. Like that's the thing. Like when you watch this, it's like the disaster artist is just trying to do Bowfinger but not as well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, they kind of end up. Chubby Rain is not, it's kind of The Room, really. And you haven't seen The Room yet, have you?
I haven't seen. I'm familiar with the premise.
We should do it one day.
The Room. You guys have to do The Room. I can't wait to hear that episode.
I've never seen the full movie. I've only seen the highlights on YouTube. But I watched The Disaster Artist, and you're right. The Disaster Artist is sort of just the spiritual remake almost.
Mm.
That's not quite as good.
Exactly. And then I think like Eddie Murphy does it again with like Dolomite Is My Name, which is just like same kind of thing, but it's also biographical, but like makes it even more sincere than this movie.
Yeah. I didn't even make that connection. You're right. That's like another mini Bowfinger, isn't it?
Mm. But I think like what you were hitting on before about like what I think like makes this like one of the great comedies is that idea, like there's this idea for me of like comedic distance or comedic gap where someone's perception of themselves is like an alternate reality than what everyone else lives in. So it's like people like Christine Baranski is like, I think one of the great comedic characters in this movie. She plays like the lead actress, Carol, like in the Bowfinger troupe of actors. And I think she's such a brilliant comedic performer, but the way that she like straddles that gap of like, someone believing that they're like this immense talent who's like worked in Hollywood in the periphery forever. And then when you see her actual acting, it's just like the psychopathy between those two things is just hysterical. She's so funny from the scenes when you see her acting or when she's like meeting like the Eddie Murphy character by going like, you know, falling over Kit Ramsey, saying how much she loves Kit Ramsey and how great it is to work with him, and he's just losing his mind at her. It's so, she's just so funny.
And she plays it like she's not acting like she knows she's in a comedy. She's like serious about this character.
It's so good.
She's perfect.
What about you, Greg? How's the rewatch?
It was a treat. It's hilarious. Like the first, I think, especially the first, I don't know, maybe half hour, is so fast paced.
Yeah.
In that it's just constantly bubbling along.
Sputter, baby.
It's better. It's better.
I didn't know that's where that was from. You've been saying that.
Yeah, yeah. I still say it, unfortunately. but it's just one of those things. And it was so interesting hearing Steve Martin say that he kind of aspired to a Fish Called Wonder, because it is has a similar pace to it.
Mm.
There's just sort of something happening the whole time, and you're trying to keep up with, because the dialogue's, you know, it's snappy. You're trying to keep up with the little one-liners that get peppered in, and you're laughing at them, and then the next scene's happening and you're kind of laughing at that. So I was watching it with the wife, and we were in stitches. It was just...
Yeah, actually, mine passed the wife test too. Ara was enjoying it.
What was the biggest laugh that you guys got with, like, your partners when watching this movie?
Oh, man, that's a good question.
That's a good question. It's probably something Eddie Murphy related. Probably Jif. Probably something Jif.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Jif. We kept reacting to his facial expressions.
Jif got a lot of love in the Carney house.
Yes.
The haircut thing. You can cut. What is that? Something about cutting his hair being it.
Yeah, would you be open to cutting your hair?
I guess.
So funny. I think Jif is just like one of the rarest Eddie Murphy creations, because it's like Eddie Murphy is usually like the Kit Ramsey, where he plays like a high status character.
Yeah.
And then to see him like undercut at playing Jif, who is like the lowest status of anyone in the film, who's just also like completely clueless, like especially two characters that are clueless in such different ways. And the way that people interact with them is so different. I think it's like the most like divergent his characters are in movies. Like in the same way, like, you know, like Buddy Love and Herman Klump from like The Nutty Professor, like they're very different, like they're polar opposites. But I think there's something more to say in this one, that he's created two really unique characters that are very different, but like there's a relation between them, and like, but they're just like very unique characters. It's not just like playing a polar opposite. They're just like two incredibly unique characters that also feel realer than a sketch character. Like they do have a reality to both of them.
Agree. That's a good way to put it. Yeah, because Buddy Love and Klump, they were like opposites. Mm-hmm. And this is two extremes.
Yeah.
Whereas these guys are just like, it's more nuanced than
They're
that.
They're more nuanced.
Yeah. Yes. And there's no prosthetic. So it's just acting, man.
Like
the guy can do it.
And especially like Jif is so fucking weird, man. Like what a weird character. So weird. Like I just adore like how like his manner of speech, like when he's like talking about how he slept with Heather Graham and stuff, and he's like, it's the best thing that's ever happened in his life. Has changed his life.
Speed and power. She gave me everything, man. Speed and power.
I had to write it down. She's like, she's a wordsmith. She's the most inventive girl.
Jesus. It's so funny.
And then so just good.
The monologue that he gives when he's talking about like how when it's the big revelation that he's Kit Ramsey's brother, and like that's so well delivered, where everyone's just in shock that they've been using him for this exact thing, and they finally like, oh my God, he's the brother, just all stunned silent. And he goes on this crazy monologue about like how it's like, when I get the coffee, I know that I got the coffee. And it's like the most boring man in the world. Like they're all just like shocked by him, and coffee. He's just going on the most boring monologue about how he's the most boring guy in the world. And he has this sense of weird pride in it. It's so good.
The errands are what keeps him going.
The errands. It's like, I can't imagine if it was Keanu. Like hearing that it was almost an action star, then no one could do what Eddie does. Like not even another comedy star could do this.
You couldn't have the range between those two characters.
What would it just changes the whole dynamic of the film, and it was always meant to be a comedy. So
let's see how it would
play out.
I have a fan theory. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a Tristan theory, to be honest.
You're a fan.
I'm a fan. That counts.
I came up with this afternoon. I got the cork board out and the red strings and such.
Good.
What if there is no Jif Ramsey? What if it's all Kit?
Whoa!
Keep going.
And like in like a reverse Tyler Durden scenario.
Yeah, and he's showing his acting range as well, that he can be two different things, not just a big movie star.
Well, also, but he definitely had some issues, right? Because he's going to Mindhead.
Yeah.
police cops, Mindhead. And so he's kind of alluding to voices in his head and maybe some kind of split personality disorder. Whoa. So maybe it's like a Tyler Durden scenario where he retreats into GIF when it's all too much.
Whoa.
Back to GIF's his like childhood space. Self, like his teenage exactly. self. Yeah.
Because even with the power of special effects these days, we don't actually see them in the same shot ever.
At the end we do.
Do we do at the end?
At the film.
But I don't think they're in the same shot. Like, yeah. They're not, are they?
I'm pretty sure they're in the, when they're watching the movie.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You see Brad Pitt and Edward Norton in the same shot, so it doesn't matter.
I don't want to yeah, why am I here poo-pooing no, your no, theory? No. Sorry.
Yeah, so I think that's exactly what happened.
Wow. 100%.
It's now canon. It's part of the film.
It's canon. I'll add it to the Wikipedia page.
At the end of the movie, you see GIF disappear into the dust.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, he shoots himself in the head and that's him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And Helena Bonham Carter's there stealing laundry. Yeah, it all adds up.
I tell you what was interesting for me. I've just started watching Fargo, the TV series.
Yeah.
Being late to the party there. You guys have heard of it?
I've heard of it. I've seen a little bit of it.
Oh, you haven't watched it?
I've only seen the first season. I've only seen the first season.
Yeah, I'm still watching the first season. That'll probably do me. It's good.
Yeah.
But I was watching it and it reminded me how funny stupid people are to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we did Bowfinger this week and I was like, what is it about dumb people in films that is so entertaining?
Yeah.
Like if you've got – Dumb and Dumber, you've got The Naked Gun, and there's just so many examples that we could list of silly characters that are our favourite characters. You know, you versus that to the other end of the spectrum with smart people.
Yeah.
A Beautiful Mind, that's not a funny movie.
No.
Interstellar, only hilarious in the ending.
True.
Big Bang Theory, I rest my case.
Yes.
Why is it that – It's a, what you know.
So
what,
smart people aren't funny.
Smart people aren't funny
to watch.
To watch,
they have to be.
Yeah,
dumb
people are just. I don't know. In when I look at my favorite films, there's usually the characters. I mean, the actors are obviously geniuses, but the characters are quite often pretty basic humans. And this film is a good example of that. They're a pack of idiots.
I agree. Yeah. I think that's so. Like, I love dumb comedy. I love idiot comedy. I agree with you. I think like there's something so fun about. Like people that are not equipped to have like to have the life that they have or to like live in the stakes that they have. And especially in a movie like this where they've accidentally created like a very high stakes scenario of like making this film illegally, covertly, none of them are equipped to work in that regard. So they have to like rise above their station. I think that's why it like works so much because like everyone's freaking dumb and it just like puts an added layer of stress onto the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's what you said before, Alexi, the gap between like what they are versus what they think they are.
Absolutely.
Is the thing that it really makes it,
And intelligence is like the best way to make that gap, to create that gap.
Yeah.
Because they just can't comprehend that they suck.
It's great. It's so great. The other memory I had of this movie – which now in 2021 is kind of hilarious, unfortunately, is I remember vividly, I don't know if I read it in a magazine, so it's not that vivid. I don't remember if it was a magazine or on TV or something, but it was an interview with Steve Martin where he's kind of bragging about discovering this hot new talent in Jamie Kennedy.
Whoa.
And I remember at the time thinking, well, that's weird because he's already been in Romeo and Juliet and Scream.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you zoom out now all the way to 2021, he was already on the way down by the time he got to Bowfinger. Like he kind of already peaked. So he like jinxed it or something. It's fascinating. Cause I thought it was really weird at the time. And now with hindsight and knowing about Son of the Mask and other movies, it's bizarre.
It was.
He's good in this. He's good in Scream and he's good in Romeo and Juliet. Like I feel like he's,
you know,
we've done him a disservice. He didn't get the right roles or something.
I was wondering the same and I was thinking, did Zach Braff and just come and take his career?
Fuck. Might be it, dude. Like, you know, Zach Braff, your Brecken Myers, like they filled the gap for that short little period that they needed the Jamie Kennedys. And I'll tell you this, I chose this movie, so I've seen it a lot of times, And literally every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, fuck, Jamie Kennedy's in this. I'm surprised by it. And it happened again today while I was watching it. I was like, oh, fuck, Jamie Kennedy's in this. I have that memory of me today going, Jamie Kennedy's in this. And in the few hours between me watching the movie and starting this podcast, I already forgot that he was in it. And then you brought it up like, oh, yeah, Jamie Kennedy. Jamie Kennedy's in this movie.
Oh, man.
Me too. And I'd written a note down to talk about it.
He's had quite a career. It's been all over the place. And such a rock solid start.
Yeah.
The trifecta, really. Romeo and Juliet. Scream, and this is like something else too. Hang on.
I'll tell you as well, for me being like a young comedy fan growing up, like, and you know, dreaming of like doing stand-up or whatever, Jamie Kennedy was like the heckler guy. Like, he had so many heckler videos on YouTube. He made that documentary about hecklers.
Take them down.
He made the documentary. Yeah.
And he was just like, he was that guy. He's got like kind of like carved out a whole niche for him in like the history of comedy, being like the heckler guy.
Well, he's kind of circled around to be the butt of the joke, because like in things like Scream, he's the smart one calling out the tropes and things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, he's one of us kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then at some point we all turned on him and he's the guy that we heckle.
Yeah.
And even that movie, I haven't seen the documentary Heckler. Have you?
Yes. It's like,
you have?
When you're like a teenager and you're like, oh, I'm going to do comedy, I'm going to be a comedian or whatever.
Oh, you need to like harden up and
learn
about
like this
it.
Set list of like comedy documentaries. There's only like 10 comedy documentaries, and like basically every comedian would have watched all of them, especially like my age. We have like access. So it's like that, the Aristocrats movie.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
The Paul Provenza movie. Yeah. It's not Bob very Saget. Good. There's a movie called Comedian that stars Jerry Seinfeld and this up-and-coming comedian at the time, Orny Adams, that is like about Jerry Seinfeld post-Seinfeld TV show coming back to start again as a comedian from scratch. And then Orny Adams, like this upcoming comedian at the time. And that one, I would say, is like fucking sick, and I would highly recommend to anyone if you can track it down.
Yeah, all right.
It's called I think it's just called Comedian, full stop or something.
It rings a bell.
That does. I feel like I can see the cover or something.
Is it black with white writing?
Maybe.
There's a chance it was.
There's a chance. Those are colours. Yeah.
It might be.
But actually, they're not colours.
That's true. They're an absence of colour. Hey, what was I going to say? Oh, Son of the Mask. Have you seen Son of the Mask?
Tragically, yes, I have seen Son of the Mask.
You got it. Oh, my God. Have you seen it, Greg?
I feel like I've seen part of it.
Somehow it's got Alan Cumming in it.
Yeah, it's so weird. And it's filmed here. It's filmed like in Australia, like in Queensland or something. Yeah. It's like.
It is bad.
Sunshine State.
I think that was the final nail in the coffin, or the final straw that prompted the doco.
Yeah.
The heckler thing.
I think so.
Because he got such bad press around it. And he was just like, what the fuck is this? And then, yeah, he made that doco. But fascinating career. Oh, and somewhere in between there was. Malibu's Most Wanted.
I forgot that existed. Far out.
Yeah. So that is not a good movie. Don't get me wrong. But there was one thing that came out of that. His name was Brad, and his like rapper name was B-Rad.
Oh yeah.
I feel like that got out. That became a bit of a thing. Like all my friends' names. We just did that same formula. It was hilarious. We had a great time. But that's kind of its only legacy. But yeah, I kind of feel bad for the guy. Although then he ended up in The Ghost Whisperer.
Well, I was going to say, hang on, don't feel too bad for him. He dated Jennifer Love Hewitt for a period of time.
Yeah, for a year.
That's 12 months.
Wow.
Yeah. That's wow.
Man, that's better than an Oscar.
So maybe he just retired after that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe he's like.
He's probably very happy with it all.
Yeah, now he's got a podcast, doesn't he?
Probably.
I think he does.
That's one thing I want to say. Famous people should not be allowed to have podcasts.
It's bullshit. Yeah. It's not fair, right?
I hate it.
It's rough, man.
You see people like Dax Shepard, who probably also killed Jamie Kennedy's career. He's got a popular podcast. Yes. Like, come on, dude. F the F off, dude.
Yeah, he gets like Sean Penn on there and talks about Charles Bukowski. Come on.
Come on, dude. No.
The ones that drive me the most insane are the ones where it's the cast of the show talking about the show. And it's like just – I don't know. Can it just not be on the podcast platform? Like, give us some space to have our thing.
Exactly. Do it as a YouTube. Yeah. Do it as a YouTube. Yeah. Do that. Make your fun little freaking videos, but don't do it a podcast. And also, like you said, not the same show. Let Jenna Fisher and Angela from The Office do a Scrubs podcast, and JD and Turk do a freaking Office podcast. Yeah. That's how it should be.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, mix it up.
Because all these things go in the TV and film category on the Apple podcast there, and they just keep pushing us down.
Exactly.
How are people supposed to find us, you know?
Exactly.
Damn you, Jamie Kennedy, and your potential podcast.
We don't even know if he has one.
I'm going to assume
he's got
does.
Something. Jamie I know he's Kennedy. Got some internet shit that he does you now. Like maybe he is a YouTube. And
he
he's
probably
one of,
does.
He's one of the good guys, like the Drew Barrymores that did a YouTube show instead of a podcast.
Good. Yeah. All right.
Thank you, Jamie Kennedy.
Jamie Kennedy, friend of the show. You're approved.
Yeah, we're back on.
The other one I thought was interesting, because you made a good point, Greg, is this was at a point in Eddie Murphy's career where the apex was a couple of movies ago.
Yes.
Could you say the same for Steve Martin? Could you say the same for another great supporting member in this, Heather Graham? Another one that had an amazing start, which when you think about it, you kind of forget. But just to list them out.
License to Drive.
Which one's that? Oh, the
it's Corey
the
Hayes.
Corey's movie, right? The two Corey's.
That's true.
I didn't realize she was in that. I remember the babe Mercedes. So right. I remember the film well because it was like it was a Corey movie when I was a kid. But I didn't realize until today when I was reading up on her.
Yeah. Well, man, aside from that one, her first few movies, Drugstore Cowboy, Gus Van Sant.
Yeah.
Then she works with David
Not
Lynch.
Not to be confused with Lars Von Trier.
We got that mixed up last time. David Lynch with Twin Peaks. She's in Swingers as the adorable, irresistible woman at the end. Paul Thomas Anderson in Boogie Nights. Austin Powers 2. This. And then, and to be fair, I think this one might have been more of a conscious choice to do more indie projects and things. But still,
I think she likes the indies.
Yeah.
She quite likes the art house.
It's a fascinating trajectory. Like that's a serious hit list. Like that's, in terms of working with directors, man.
And I would say like, especially it's like this, I would say 98 and 99, like that's peak Heather Graham because you got Lost in Space, which is not a great movie. Yeah. But I have a love for it. I have a love for her in it. And I had like the freaking toys for that movie and stuff. But then like I would say that then Austin Powers and Bowfinger in the same year, like right after it. Yeah. That's a bit of an apex. Like her as Felicity Shagwell in Spy Who Shagged Me, that's like an apex character for me.
And the video clip for American Woman.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Lenny Kravitz.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a big moment.
And also the Madonna video clip, that Beautiful Stranger that came out also with the Austin Powers movie.
That was a good one.
That was I thought the late 90s were good for me.
He was school captain.
Oh,
no, that was primary school.
Oh, that was primary school.
Okay. No, primary school. It was all downhill.
So you were already.
93 was the year.
Yours is more maps to Eddie Murphy's trajectory. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay. This is our Dolomite.
Yeah,
that works.
Exactly.
What was I going to say? So, is there something here where there's a Bowfinger curse, and a lot of these actors kind of this was their last good one? I don't know.
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh no, Robert Downey Jr. That's a good point.
He saved it. He comes back. He broke the Bowfinger curse.
Interestingly, so just 1 year earlier, he was supposed to be in Wild Things instead of Matt Dillon.
Oh,
but it was still too much of an insurance risk.
No way.
He was too wild.
He was too wild.
As it were.
But the crazy thing is, I realized today in looking at Heather Graham, in 1998, instead of Wild Things, he did another movie which had an iconic threesome in it called Two Girls and a Guy. Was it Two Guys and a Girl? Two Girls and a Guy, right?
Of course.
So was that like something he just really wanted to do?
Yeah. So I got to get laid twice at the same time, dude. I got to do it.
On camera.
I just came out of jail.
Yeah.
And I think I would say just with Heather Graham, that is the one character in this movie where I wouldn't say it's totally outdated and problematic, but it is the one that's sort of on the cusp of being a little bit weird. Like if she was the only female, it would be pretty bad.
Yeah.
But luckily she's not. But yeah, they're sleeping the way to the top thing.
Right. Yeah,
I think you're right in like the way that it kind of like escapes being like, oh, look at the problematic thing in Bowfinger is that it's like all the powers with her in every situation. Like she's the one that's like using her sexuality as her power.
Yeah, you're right. She's the one. That's a really good point. That makes it feel less icky.
Yeah.
In saying that though, just to ickyfy it a little bit, apparently now Steve Martin may or may not have based that on Anne Heche.
I have heard. Especially when you get to the ending where she leaves Bowfinger to be with the most powerful lesbian in Hollywood.
Lesbian in Hollywood.
Is quite the ending to his relationship with Anne Heche leaving him for Ellen DeGeneres, right?
He dated Anne Heche and then Anne Heche went to Ellen DeGeneres.
That's...
Wow. You asshole.
Oh, okay, that was a fuck you asshole and a wow.
It actually is both. It's both.
It's appropriate.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's
if only
that's
she knew how powerful Ellen would become. Yeah. Well, until this year. Man, 1998, Ellen wasn't even that powerful.
Exactly. This year is Ellen's Bowfinger year. The curse has just begun.
Yeah, there you go.
I did very much enjoy when Steve Martin confronts her after realizing that she's banged. Who was after him? Can't remember. Jeff, of course. He's like, "You've been sleeping. We're through. We're done. We've been sleeping with Jeff." She goes, "So what?" He goes, "I never thought of it that way."
Yeah. See you tonight.
See you tonight.
That's one of the perfect like Steve Martin like comedy moments where he just like just has a flip instantly, and it's just like he's just developed like thousands of thoughts in 1 second, and it's like the driest return.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
Alexi, where do you think this, where does this rank for you in terms of a Frank Oz film?
Oh, shit, that's hard. Because I would say it has to be number one easily is Little Shop of Horrors. Because I think that's like a pure masterpiece. Yeah. Like you were saying, like it's Frank Oz firing on all cylinders. And then I'm split. It's between this and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. But I think this edges Dirty Rotten Scoundrels just out a little bit because this has got all the Frank Oz style. It's got like this satirical bent. But then I think it edges it out because it just is very specific in that it's specifically one of the best movies about filmmaking that's ever been made. And it's like this really goofy satirical comedy that has like the greatest Eddie Murphy performances. And then like also what I really dug the last couple of times watching it is like the weird mind head undercurrent of Scientology, I think is really funny.
I didn't get that before this viewing.
That's a good point. That's something that I definitely didn't get in 1999.
Mm.
But then in this one, I'm like, okay, it seems like it's Scientology. But in saying that, I feel like Scientology would endorse the belief in aliens, first of all. And would probably facilitate the Laker girls being flashed. They would probably just sort it out for him.
Yeah.
We've learned a lot about Scientology in the last
years. Or actually, maybe the action star that could replace Eddie is Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the only one that could probably pull off the dual roles and also like the intense energy that's needed and like the effectiveness of performance. Because a lot of the other action stars are quite dry, but Tom Cruise is a very wet little actor.
And he has got an element of self-awareness about him these days, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially you go like Tropic Thunder, which is like a similar comedy as well. Like he could really do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could.
The Joel Silver thing.
That works.
I like it. It checks out.
It does check out. I had another question. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys know the answer to this, but is Bowfinger a real name? Because I couldn't seem to find it.
Anyone called Bowfinger?
And then if so, why is the movie, like why that, is that, am I missing something with the name Bowfinger?
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like a fake name. Like can you imagine some kid being born like Jeremy Bowfinger? Like it's not.
Yeah.
It's a weird name. So it must
be like. Someone out there is crying right now.
Yeah.
Wait, Joey Jojo. That's the worst name I ever heard.
But I would think like Bowfinger himself, the character seems like a guy that would make an anachronistic surname like that to like stand out.
Yeah.
To like stick in people's minds, like a freaking finger pushing into their skull. But also.
Because it sounds like a James Bond movie or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sounds like a James Bond character.
Bowfinger.
Yeah. And then that's the song.
I think as well, like it's weird because I'm like, this would not be the title I would ever choose for this movie. Like I would.
That's kind of what I'm getting at too. Because it's like, A, is it even a real name? Mm-hmm. B, it doesn't tell you anything about what it is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just sounds like a James Bond movie or something. Like this,
like, that's a bit of a pet peeve for me, is when a movie just has the name of a character that I could not give a fuck about, like John Carter,
exactly.
or Michael Clayton. Nell. Oh my God, Nell. That's an obsession for me, that movie. That's the weirdest movie ever made. Nell is the weirdest fucking movie ever made. Like the Chick-a-Pay, Miss May, Chick-a-Pay, the weirdest performance. Liam Neeson's fucking weird in it. Jodie Foster's so fucking weird in it. Next time, can I come back and do Nell?
I feel like I've only seen that once on TV or something.
Let's do Nell.
Yeah, okay.
I've got to come back for Nell. I'm back for Nell. You got to get back for it.
Deal.
Excellent. But that's true about the other, like the other more normal, like Michael Clayton. Mm-hmm. I'm still not. Yeah. Was that about a lawyer? Was he a lawyer?
He's a lawyer or some shit.
Yeah. I think he had a beard.
Do you remember the Angelina Jolie movie Salt?
Yeah.
I remember
just call
of
that,
it.
Like Cool Spy or some shit. I don't know. Like, who's Salt? Yeah.
Cool Spy.
Cool Spy.
Salty Spy.
Yeah. Salty Spy. Yeah.
It only works if you get to the next. So Cobra. Cobra kind of works.
Yes.
That one was top of mind because I had to Google if Cabretti was a real name because his name's Cabretti. And
exactly.
Just so his name could be Cobra.
Well, it was called but Cobra. It wasn't called Marion Cabretti.
Exactly. So it works. That works.
I would actually go see Marion Cabretti because it's just like that.
Yeah, but you think you'd be getting a period drama.
Yeah, exactly. No,
that's what he'll call the fourth installment, like how he had John Rambo and Rocky Balboa. Yeah. He'll have Marion Cabretti.
Could you? That would actually like turn my whole life around if we found out we were getting like a Cobra franchise now. I would fucking shit. Yeah. I would shit. And it's, I think that's life something that's always stuck in my head. Like, do you think that like the character's name was Mario Cabretti and then someone's like, that sounds too silly, change it to Marion, which is just weirder.
Yeah. Well, you know the Beverly Hills Cop connection, right?
Yeah.
Because it was Axel Cabretti
exactly.
at some point. But
just that's something that crazy. Will never leave my brain, that Cobra and Beverly Hills Cop were once the same movie.
It's insane. And actually, now that I think of it, it's another role that Eddie Murphy
Correct.
Took off an action star.
Absolutely.
Bowfinger in this.
Yo, dude, actually, Sly would crush this role. Even absolutely. Like if you just do Jif is Rocky and then like Rambo is Kit Ramsey, that's a fucking movie, dude.
That works.
Because Rocky is so stupid. He's my favorite dumb character in any movie.
I like when he talks under his breath. It's sort of like a Popeye thing. You know, Popeye's got like the two voices.
And
then he's got his outer voice. But no one knows what he's saying. He's just
love it. He's rambling as Rocky is my favorite shit in the world. Like I live and die by it. Yo, agent, you know, got a couple of nice things over here. Just do a nice night together, you and I. But, you know, a couple of nice guys walking around just saying the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, she still went for it. No wonder she wasn't interested.
I reckon I haven't seen Cobra since I was 16, but it might get a play tonight.
The first half is amazing. Mm. So not a bad one to fall asleep to.
Yeah, it is good to follow because it feels like it would have been the 11 p.m. movie anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The first half is so good, so good. And you know what? That's almost – the making of Cobra might have been close to something like this Bowfinger because he thought he was making – you know, he'd done Rocky and he'd done First Blood. He thought this was the third one. This is like the this is going to be my trinity of iconic.
Then he chose the wrong jeans.
And the wrong license plate. His license plate says awesome.
Oh, God. Is that real?
It was his car. It was his car as well.
God. It was his car as well. And, well, Al Recasti in that was you should have had Judge Reinhold as Cobra.
Wow.
Because then all those things fit.
Yeah.
All those things fit. The number plate that says awesome.
Irony.
It's more of a dorky Cobra. He's more of a dork.
Yeah.
It works nicely. Think about that as you're watching.
What would you retitle Bowfinger if you had to give it a title that made sense? Would it be like Chubby Rain or something else?
I heard that Chubby Rain was in the mix, but that's equally confusing.
Yeah.
I don't really have a solution to this. The only one I had was at least Bobby Bowfinger at least, so you know it's even a name.
Mm.
But then to your point, but then it's still only a name.
Yeah, true.
But at least it's more than just a word that I don't know what it means.
Mm.
Yeah.
What about, let me tell you this one. Yeah. Manipulator, that's good.
Yeah.
Here's my pitch. Mm. What about Holly Weird?
Hey.
Because it gets a little bit weird, but it's set in Hollywood.
It does get weird.
Hollywood? Weird. Hollywood.
There we go. I think nice. We got something here.
It works.
Yeah,
we should have Hollywood pitch meetings. That would be great. I mean, we've already have a list of demands for Netflix.
Absolutely.
Next, we'll just send a list of movie name suggestions to Hollywood.
For old movies that have already been released.
Already been released.
Exactly.
For your consideration. Please retitle Cobra to Marion Cabretti. I think we'll get a good response.
I got a good feeling about
it. It's inevitable.
Oh, something I learned about, this is completely random, but I wanted to share because it blew my mind. Something I learned about Steve Martin today is that he wasn't an SNL cast member.
Yeah.
He was just on it a lot.
Just a frequent host.
Mr. Host.
Frequent host.
Because so the two cast members of SNL in this movie were actually Eddie Murphy and Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, that's true.
Was he in, I don't know, yeah.
He was the youngest cast member, I think, until, what's his name?
That explains a few things.
Pete Davidson, yeah.
What's the deal there? Do you know much about that?
Man, I used to love his stand-up. Like he was, like, really? Especially when I was starting out, like he was like this hot, young, like hip stand-up. I thought he fucking rocked. Like he used to do like.
Really?
Yeah, there was this, what was it? Dave Attell had like this sick, like stand-up TV show, and it was like dirty comedians that you wouldn't normally see on TV. And that was the first time I ever saw Pete Davidson. I was like, oh shit, this guy is the next big thing. And then I'm shocked how right I was. Like I can't believe that he actually became the next big thing.
To be fair, I'm sort of judging him without ever seeing his work, but he just strikes me as a guy that isn't that funny.
Mm.
I find him quite likable, and I was pretty pumped for – I get on board with these things.
Yeah.
Maybe – a bit like you're saying, I want to see, I'm like, oh, this guy's going to be good. I want to see what happens here.
Yeah.
But the King of Staten Island, I was a bit.
I really liked that. I really dug that.
You liked it?
I mean, I love Judd Apatow. Okay. I'm a Judd Apatow guy.
Me too.
And I was like.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We both love funny people. A lot of people don't like funny
love
people.
Love funny people.
Okay,
special movie.
Yes.
Because I was going to say, it's in a similar bucket to this one for me where it's not my favorite movie, but I can watch it anytime. Yeah. There's something about that movie that just makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Not the part about Adam Sandler nearly dying, but it's more the subplot of Seth Rogen and those guys and trying to make it in comedy and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
It just warms my heart.
And the Schwartzman.
Yeah,
and
Schwartzman.
Oh, Schwartzman's so good in it. Love Yo Teach. And it's also like Heckler, one of the prescribed comedy texts. Like I saw that.
Oh,
when
it
came
out
in the cinema, and I was like, yes, this is shit. This will be my life one day.
Yeah.
So good.
It's. I love that movie. I'm glad to hear you like it too because, it's not many people like it. I think it falls in a weird place because some people watch it expecting an Adam Sandler movie. It kind of sits in a weird in-between area.
I love it.
But it's a good one. I like it.
I literally have a poster for Funny People up in my house. I love it.
No way.
Yeah, I think it rocks.
Oh, and he sings John Lennon. I can't argue with that. Adam Sandler singing John Lennon.
Sandler and fucking Eddie Murphy are the two where I'm like, they have such good singing voices and people need to know about it.
So when I was living in New York, I saw Judd Apatow live. It was Judd Apatow and Friends. And you don't know who his friends are until you go.
Whoa.
And it was Adam Sandler and he did mostly his songs and he did the Chris Farley song.
Oh,
and it was like.
Sad.
Not a dry eye in the house. It was like, because he's singing seriously then. He's not just singing about farting and stuff.
Oh, God.
And it was,
his Axl Rose impersonation.
Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Let's buy him a present.
He's got enough presents. Netflix bought him a few presents.
They did.
He's technically a colleague of yours.
Yeah, technically.
Oh, because you're both Netflix employees.
My God, I might try and send a message through. I might try and get something through to him.
You try and have a chat by the water cooler.
At the Christmas party.
Yeah.
Christmas
party. I hope
corner
so.
Him.
I hope so.
Pitch some material.
Him and Dave Chappelle going like, hey guys, it's just, we're co-workers, let's hang out, let's catch up sometime.
Chappelle's got a new something coming up, doesn't he?
Probably.
Always, I reckon.
Well, he just got the rights back to his show.
I think he's got the show. The show's coming back.
No, he got the rights back so he gets the money for it now.
Because
people were boycotting it because Comedy Central was getting all the... All the money's
defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Why do we get into the verdict?
I don't know what to say, really.
I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
Oh, yeah.
the law.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
I want to have them answered immediately.
You can't handle the truth.
What are you waiting for?
Ah! Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Nothing further, Your Honor.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Look, often for the verdict, I'll have a little pithy one-liner to sum up how I feel about it, but I feel like we've kind of captured a lot of how I feel about it. I think it's very rewatchable, and in the same sense as something like Funny People, where, a bit like you were saying, Greg, there's just lots of little bits in it. So it lends itself to...
so articulately.
No, but it lends itself to a passive watch even. Like, you can just put it on, walk in and out of the room, and you'll walk into something hilarious. Like, it's just... every scene's got a little bit of gold in it, so you don't really even need to pay that much attention.
Absolutely.
So it's 100% a rewatch from me. Big tick. How about you guys?
I would say I'm with you. It's a big tick on the rewatch for me. And I think as well, like we talked about it a bit, that like it's kind of like a dense comedy in that there's still jokes that we discover like after X amount of watches, after X amount
of years. And that's
a whole layer of jokes that we never understood before. And I think you captured it perfectly at the start of this discussion, Tristan, when you said this is the Avengers of like 90s comedy. And I think that's really what it is. You've got Steve Martin top of his game. You've got like Heather Gray and Jamie Kennedy. But beyond all of that, you've got Christine Baranski doing one of her best, funniest performances. And like truly, truly, undoubtedly for me, like top tier Eddie Murphy in the mode that you want Eddie Murphy to be in, which is multiple unique and distinct characters. This is a big old ticker for me. I adore this movie.
Yes.
And I can't imagine in a rewatch that I will still like fall out of love with it.
Big El Tico. Could not agree more.
I'm going to add to the tick pile.
Yes, baby. Go, Greg.
Third tick.
All right.
Yeah, it's one of those ones I say it didn't happen straight away for me, but it was part of the vernacular. Mm. And on the rewatch, it was great. There was there was a lot in there that I hadn't noticed even all those times I watched it at uni. Probably less of a cloud on my head now. but it was thoroughly enjoyable for a whole new set of reasons, and I'll comfortably watch it again in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. I'll give it four. Four stars.
Four stars out of five?
Out of five.
Out of five.
Strong. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby. Three ticks and a four.
Yeah,
that's a strong rewatch. I get. There you go. Now we're actually speaking of Eddie Murphy. Next week we're going to be doing Coming to America, because suddenly the new one's coming out, so we got to step it up.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to doing that one.
Yeah, you'd be covering that on Total Reboot at some point, wouldn't you?
Who knows? I remember we did an episode. We did like an Eddie Murphy miniseries on Mic Check, and we did Coming to America. And I think that's a really great comedy. That's one of my favorites.
It's one of the best, isn't it?
It rocks.
What else you got going on? You may have a new Finding Something podcast in the world.
Down the line. Hopefully this year we'll be coming back with another Finding series. But for now, we've got the first two series up there, Finding Drago, which is the first one, which is trying to track down the mysterious author of Rocky IV, Ivan Drago-based spin-off novel. So it's a real documentary that's very silly and very funny, trying to track down a mysterious and elusive author. Second season is about trying to track down an elusive filmmaker called Sidney Ling, who claims to be the youngest filmmaker in the world back in the 1970s and got the Guinness World Record for it, but we think that it's fake. So we try to track him down. And Total Reboot's a podcast that's coming back like basically this week when you're listening to this, where we are now doing like bigger mini series where we pick like interesting topics and genres and stuff that we find interesting. And then we'll do like pick great films or significant films in that category. So we're starting off this year with teen movies, and we're doing Dazed and Confused as our first episode back this year.
All right.
Yeah, nice.
Very good.
I can only listen to Total Reboot when it's a movie we've already covered. So I listened to Scarface recently. That was good. But otherwise, I'll keep an eye out for any movies we've already covered. So as to not accidentally copy the format of your show.
Scarface, our craziest episode in a long time, where we just like went insane talking about it.
That was pretty fun to listen to. Who was the guy with you? Eddie?
Aaron Chen, very funny comedian. One of my best friends, funniest comedian.
He was great.
Yeah, the best.
Hey, the only recasting I had for this film was I thought Woody Harrelson would be a great Bowfinger.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Channeling his Kingpin type of, yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I thought Steve Carell, potentially.
Yeah, Steve Carell could do it.
Because he's got a bit of the Steve Martin thing where he can be an asshole but likable. Mm. But so does Woody, yeah.
I'm sure many people in Hollywood could be an asshole.
They could do it.
It's true.
Yeah.
They could do it. They've got plenty of them. And maybe one day we'll get a reboot of this with the blowing up of the Hollywood Mansion.
Yep.
And the Stephen Bradbury ending.
Oh, you could only hope so.
You hope so. Yeah. And Sylvester Stallone as Kit Ramsey and Jif. That's what I want.
Gotcha, sucker. That's the closest I could do. On that note, thank you again, Alexi, for joining us.
Absolutely, mate. That's been a pleasure.
It's been an absolute delight.
This was sick. Thanks for having me, guys. It was so fun to hang out and chat about like this underappreciated great that hopefully we're getting a few more eyes on if they haven't checked it out before.
Yes, good point. 100%. It's on in Australia. It's on Binge, so go watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again, and we'll see you when we do a little film called Nell.
Nell.
Yes, I got to be the returning guest for Nell. I can't wait.